from the Samira Foundation, this is Demystifying NMO and MOG, where we bring together the world's foremost experts, the doctors dedicated to studying it, and the patients who live with it every day. With support from Genentech. Welcome back to another episode. Today we're honored to have Alana Yee with us for a discussion about sharing personal health stories. Alana became a rare disease advocate after living through years of challenges to find a diagnosis and treatment. She shares her journey of experiencing cognitive decline due to autoimmune encephalitis. She discusses how connecting with other patients in an online format was transformative in solving her own medical mysteries. Alana now uses her story to help others facing similar barriers. Alana and I explore some best practices about telling our stories. We discuss considerations like balancing emotion with facts, privacy concerns, and overcoming fears. Alana provides advice drawn from her own experiences, and I hope you enjoy the conversation about storytelling's empowering nature and how it can drive progress for patients with rare diseases. Let's dive into Alana's incredible story and the lessons she learned along the way. Welcome to Demystifying NMO and MOG. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come and talk to us. You have a great story to tell. But to get started, can you tell us a little bit about you and your story?
Sure. So in terms of being a rare disease patient, my story begins in 2014. I was studying medical laboratory science at the University of Alberta, which is in Western Canada, and I was pretty active in campus life. I did a lot of volunteering. I played soccer. I worked at a breast cancer research lab and thought I would go on to have my own lab one day. But then I had this strange flu-like illness that left me with persistent memory issues. And I was super unnerved and distraught because I just stopped being able to absorb lectures or readings, even though memory had always been my strong suit. So I went to the University Health Center a few weeks later to check out what was going on, but none of the tests came back abnormal. And the working theory was just that maybe I contracted something like mono, even though I was negative for that, but just some sort of virus that was going to take some time to get out of my system. But then weeks turned to months, which then turned into years of just having no concrete diagnosis except maybe depression or atypical bipolar disorder. And the memory issues did fluctuate somewhat the first few years, but gradually it just worsened into extreme verbal fluency problems, executive dysfunction, general reasoning issues, and severe disorientation. And it was to the severity that I did have to leave academia, and I couldn't even hold down an entry-level job because the cognitive decline was just so immense. So that all went on until 5 years later. I wound up catatonic, just unresponsive to the world around me. And then I ended up in the hospital, where it was discovered through a FDG PET scan of the brain that I was not malingering, or I did not have a primary psychiatric issue as most thought, but that I in fact had seronegative autoimmune encephalitis, or AE, which is inflammation of the brain caused by a misdirected immune system response against healthy brain cells. And it's closely related to NMOSD and MOGAD. So there's similar pathogenic mechanisms and similar treatments, you know, like the steroids, IVIG, plasmapheresis, rituximab that this audience is probably familiar with. And after about 3 years of playing the game of trial and error through all first and second line AE treatments, I thankfully ended up in long-term remission and reversed a loss of over 30 IQ points. And now I'm here, which is all just a long way to say that I'm grateful to be in a position now where I'm able to turn my experiences with AE into a tool for patient advocacy.
Well, it's an incredible story, and we're certainly grateful that you were able to overcome all that. Whether it's AE, NMO, MOG, or any other rare disease, there tend to be threads throughout everyone's story that mm-hmm. that are so similar.
Yep.
And our stories are so personal to us, and they're so important for a number of reasons. Considering our journeys and everything we've had to overcome with our illnesses and challenges in life. Specifically for you, though, what was it that motivated you to want to start sharing your personal health story?
So, like, I had never set out to tell my story, and it's just something that I very much fell into by accident, just kind of as a result of the self-advocacy journey that I've been on in order to solve my own medical mystery. I've just spent weeks and months on end pursuing every rabbit hole there is on autoimmune encephalitis, from Googling to searching PubMed, social media, and joining support groups. Just all of that sort of thing, all because I knew I was just falling through like cracks of the medical system, and deep down I knew I just didn't have another choice if I wanted to get my brain back. And obviously you have to be cautious because there's a lot of misinformation out there, but hands down the most helpful information I found was directly from other patients. And like part of that is because autoimmune encephalitis is a rare disease that only really started to receive attention in the past 1 to 2 decades. So, like the field of research and standards of care, that all still needs time to mature. But like I would not be here without the information I found in Facebook groups and other patient forums. So just like things like what treatment protocols people were getting, what symptoms they had, what advice they were getting from their doctors. Also, frankly, which doctors to go to. Like in my case, it took 12 neurologists and multiple medical systems just for me to get into remission, because the research just has not caught up to the realities of non-textbook seronegative cases like mine. But anyway, just as time went on, I found myself wanting to give back and share the information I had gained through my treatment journey and other lived experience as an encephalitis patient. So over time, I found myself steadily sharing more and more of my story across various forums and writing a blog. And things just kind of snowballed from there, where I had just more people reaching out to me because of something they saw me write or say in a support group. And I would essentially end up mentoring people on how to navigate their medical journey, like how to prepare for medical appointments or advocate for treatment. And through that, I learned that not only sharing information, but sharing my story was providing value to others that was hard for them to find elsewhere. Like when I think back to when I was very sick, I couldn't find precedent for anyone who described spending years as though they were just losing themselves to dementia, but found evidence of brain inflammation and got diagnosed with encephalitis and then got their brain back with immunotherapy. But I know it would have reduced my sense of doom and anguish, and given me a lot of hope to see evidence that recovering from that is a possible reality. So I share my story
Right.
because I've learned that it's had a positive impact on others, and I want to give voice to a side of being a patient that I don't see commonly represented.
For people who have had experiences with rare diseases, they may think that they would like to tell their story, but sometimes getting started can be difficult, or they may struggle with why they should even bother. Do you have any thoughts on that?
There have been certain times that I've been really in my head about storytelling, or I felt just shy about it. But one way that I've overcome that is just getting clear on what's my why and why am I here and why do I do what I do. And despite all the hardship that has come as a result of becoming sick with AE, like it's also given me the gift of clarity in terms of how I want to spend my life. And just given everything that I've gone through, I know that I want to spend my time working on problems that will lead to reduced suffering for autoimmune neurology patients, and especially the unnecessary suffering that can be solved with today's resources, right? Like it didn't take me having this brand spanking new medication that's beyond the frontiers of scientific understanding to get my brain back. It really just took using diagnostic and therapeutic tools that have existed since well beyond when I first had symptoms, but which were just not made available due to gaps in the medical system. So just reminding myself that I can use my story in service of greater life goals has helped me to get out of my head and just get out of my own way and just share my story. I mean, when I started telling my story, I had no idea that it would lead to where I am now, and to working in patient advocacy and being able to make a difference with my story. And so whenever I'm kind of feeling reluctant to to share, or wonder like if anyone's gonna really care about this. I kind of just expand the time horizon a bit and think through and remind myself on like what's my why.
Kind of talked about baby steps and how you started to share your stories. So, what kind of barriers and challenges did you end up facing, and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, so I'm not someone who gravitates to the spotlight like whatsoever. So like I just kind of struggle with the idea of being a quote unquote storyteller because like there's just something about the word that seems kind of overwhelming. Like my mind will automatically make the association with best-selling authors or movie makers that people care about. Whereas my natural tendency with AE, especially early on, was to think that just kind of this is dumb and no one cares, which sounds kind of harsh, but that's also kind of the message you can end up absorbing if you aren't around supportive people. But anyway, like when I reframe storytelling as simply just trying to communicate a message, that has personally reduced the sense of overwhelm and makes the experience or the idea of sharing my experiences more doable as opposed to just a blank canvas where I don't know where to begin.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You start talking to others, and it turns into more of a conversation instead of just talking at people. And the ripple effect of that is being able to help other people. So, have you used different platforms or mediums to share your story?
Yeah, so like I've always naturally gravitated to writing, but there have been times where I pretty much have not been able to write because of how severe the encephalitis was. Like I remember some times where it would literally take me an hour to write just 100 words that would make sense, which is kind of funny to think back on because now I do a lot of grant writing. But just anyway, during that inflamed period, I still wanted to do something. So there was a long stretch where I gravitated to Instagram because it was motivating that I could still do photography and produce something I was happy with through that medium, whereas it was just kind of demotivating to try and write during that period. But then once I started getting more of my cognitive functioning back, I did have some experimental phases, I guess. And I think part of that was just me trying to find my voice again. So like 1 year I published a short podcast series every day of February in the lead up to World Encephalitis Day, which is on February 22nd. I also dabbled for a short time in creating vlogs for YouTube. And one thing I actually really enjoyed early into recovery and would also recommend to others was joining what's called the Rare Compassion Program, which is run by the rare disease nonprofit called Global Genes. And what they do is pair medical students with those with lived rare disease experience to meet up virtually, like one-on-one once a month, just to share perspectives and stories and learn from one another. And that was a confidence booster because I mean you had a captive audience that had to listen to what you said, but really low, like you get paired with some great future medical professionals who are genuinely curious and invested in your story. And then as a side program to that, Global Genes hosted what's called Rarely Told Stories workshops that teach you the basics of storytelling by video. And so I ended up filming a couple short videos just on my iPhone, which Global Genes ended up choosing to be screened at a couple of their conferences. So they flew me in and I spoke as a panelist, and it was just really liberating to get outside of my comfort zone and also see that my story had a positive impact on just an audience of strangers. But the real icing on the cake there was that someone at the conference they actually liked my story enough to pass my name on to Science Magazine and to be a panelist on an episode of their rare disease webinar series. And it was just cool to experience that like full circle moment and reflect on like, okay, maybe I didn't end up in medical academia like I thought I would, but I did find a sort of backdoor into making like a small mark on one of the biggest academic journals in the world. And so I guess I share all that with the hopes that people can take away the fact that there are countless avenues out there to share your story. And you can start small, you can start in a private setting, you can even start anonymously, like I did with my blog, like just without any big goal in mind. But the more you do it, I think you'll find the more empowering it gets and the more doors that that will open, which can be difficult to see when you're new to it, but you never quite know where your story will lead or what the impact will be without starting somewhere.
I definitely agree. Storytelling is so much more than just words. And you talked about using video and photography as ways to tell your story. And there are other great programs. One of our ambassadors for the Smire Foundation, Nell, she's found great success in the arts as a way of telling your story. And I took part in the Rare Compassion program also last year, and it was a great opportunity. And it was just really good practice in being able to hone your skills in storytelling and polish things and come better at it.
Absolutely.
So you talked about can start telling your story anonymously, and that gives you that a safe space to kind of express yourself. And because the things that we talk about are often very powerful, have had life-changing impact on us as patients and our families. So how do you balance the emotional and factual aspects of recounting your stories of such tough times and difficult experiences?
Yeah, so I'd say it really depends on the audience and the key message that I want to convey. And this is going to be a bit of an overgeneralization, but like with a patient audience, I would say I try to put greater emphasis on sharing the emotional side of things because deep down, I think people are mostly just looking to feel alone. And so for me, just because I was talking about originally like such sensitive and raw things, it was just easier for me to start anonymously, and then so I wasn't so in my head about how are people perceiving me, and I'm just another fellow encephalitis patient going through an experience that is probably shared on some level with what they're going through or what they've gone through previously. Whereas I'll say, like with a policymaker at Rare Disease Week on Capitol Hill, for example, well, there's still going to be benefit from sharing the emotional side because it establishes that human connection, but they're probably more inclined to want to understand the facts of the situation to determine if they should take any action. But just as far as my own journey with wrestling with how to balance the emotional versus factual aspects of my story, I'd say I'm pretty analytical by nature, and like in school, I loved learning about human physiology and excelled in academic writing, which is part of why I was originally shooting for a career in medical academia. But over time, I learned that the facts of what I was trying to communicate would resonate more deeply when wrapped into a story that included my internal subjective experience of what was going on. And what helped that click for me was a piece of advice I got from the YAR Speakers Bureau, which is a great program out of the Every Life Foundation for Rare Diseases. And that advice was, don't just tell people things that they can Google, because as a rare disease advocate, your lived experience is just so much more powerful. And it's really the emotions that make the facts and the story come alive, and just makes those facts more memorable and more impactful. So I'll give you a concrete example. The subset of AE called anti-NMDA receptor encephalitis is basically thought of as like the poster child of all like 20 plus types of autoimmune encephalitis. And it's known as a dramatic hit and run monophasic illness. You deteriorate over days to weeks with seizures, psychosis, hallucinations, and memory problems to the extent that you end up in the hospital. You might even need ICU level care, but you can experience a significant turnaround with immunosuppressive treatment. And if you've ever read the book or seen the movie Brain on Fire, that's an example of textbook NMDA encephalitis. And the book
Okay.
author, Susanna Cahalan, the patient that's featured, she deserves a lot of credit because she raised a lot of awareness for the condition. And it was just like a very vivid and emotional portrayal of encephalitis that stuck out in people's minds and really put the disease on the map. But at the same time, that's just one face of encephalitis, and it can actually manifest with a spectrum of neuropsychiatric presentations, especially as a wide range of receptors or parts of the brain can be impacted, and especially like something like I think they say up to 50% of AE patients are seronegative, and so there may be a mix of dysfunctional immune pathways. Now, seronegative patients tend to be overlooked, and without having those detectable autoantibodies present, well, like autoantibodies, they're used as a core diagnostic biomarker for AE. So without them, seronegative patients often experience greater diagnostic delays, and they may also experience a level of persisting uncertainty over the diagnosis, especially if they relapse, or like greater dismissal by medical providers and more barriers to treatment access. But like, it's one thing to read that in a paper where it just remains an abstract idea, but like, what does that really look like? And in my case, the complication of being a seronegative patient, it wasn't just a small bump in the road with a slightly worse outcome. Like, that diagnostic delay led to, it just kind of led to my life imploding, where I lost out on prime formative years of my 20s while I just wandered around in this perpetual fog and steadily losing my brain to the tune of like over 30 IQ points, while facing the fear of knowing that there was just some nameless monster out there lurking in the fog that may or may not strike with a lethal hit, because it could be anything and I could not rely on the medical system for protection. So, like, there I was experiencing this profound cognitive debilitation, just fighting the despair of being forced to give up my aspirations and career plans, just drowning in this paralyzing uncertainty and becoming socially isolated as I had my experiences dismissed and psychologized, while not knowing that the monster would only grow bigger and slowly disable me over half a decade until I fell catatonic. And then, like, huzzah, it was discovered I had a very treatable condition called autoimmune encephalitis, though I would end up relapsing after that twice, and then those same feelings of just despair and devastation would haunt me again. But not so much driven by a nameless monster lurking in the fog, but driven by some cold encounters with the medical system. So, I know I got a little carried away there, but I'm just trying to emphasize the point that, like, it's one thing to lay out the facts. Like, it took me 5 years to be diagnosed. I experienced two relapses. I had to see 12 neurologists to get into remission. But, like, it's another thing to paint the picture of getting a little wrecked in the process. And unfortunately, a lot of patients don't come back from that. Like, AE can sometimes be fatal and it can leave people with severe brain damage. And, like, I've seen families destroyed because just the impacts of encephalitis can be invisible and hard to understand. But with me being one of the fortunate ones that has come back, I'm motivated to leverage my story to create a better future for fellow patients.
That was an excellent example of taking the facts. The facts are one thing, but when we put a face to it, it shows us the actual impact of the everyday life and makes it more concrete. It allows us to become more in tune on a more personal level. And so we are able to see ourselves.
It definitely, adding that story component and adding those emotions that impact all of us at some point in time, maybe not necessarily because of a severe illness, but those are all shared human emotions, and by leaning into some of that, it just makes what you've gone through more relatable. It makes whatever message you may be trying to convey more, just hit home in a more impactful way.
Yes. So privacy is something we have to consider when we're putting ourselves out there to the public world where things don't go away. Once it's out there, it's out there. So how can we still be authentic, but hold back parts of our experiences for ourselves? How do you decide what parts of the story to share and what parts you just want to keep personal for you?
It's definitely a tricky question that I'm still grappling with. As like, when I first started sharing my story, as we touched on, like, it was mostly anonymous or in private forums, and I just wasn't doing much in the public light at that time. But I've been slowly realizing and coming to terms with the fact that the less reserved I am about what I share, the greater impact I can have with my advocacy. But with that being said, someone kindly told me once that you don't need to be in any rush to kind of bear it all, so to speak, and that when you do want to share, just make sure it's on your own timeline and that you're comfortable with it. And I found those to be very helpful words of wisdom, as once you tell your story, it's not just yours anymore. Like it's out there for public interpretation. So I would say that when you're considering telling your story, just make sure that you're going about it in a thoughtful and intentional way, and spend some good time reflecting on like what you'd be comfortable with, say, a neighbor or employer or acquaintance knowing if things were to get back around to them. And I will also say that the answer may shift over time as well. Like, a few years back, I was pretty active about blogging my story somewhat in real time. Just like I felt at that time that I'm just a very sick patient and I want to tell the raw story of encephalitis. But now that I'm in remission, I feel like my identity has evolved beyond being just a patient. And so I feel like my experiences are they're kind of like less so the common story of encephalitis and more so something that's like more personal to me as an individual that I want to handle more delicately. So for now, I've just kind of decided that my focus will be on sharing the parts of my story that I have more distance from and have had time to make more peace with, because there's not really a rush to share anything else.
Putting so much of yourself out there through storytelling, or putting parts of yourself out there through storytelling. What about concerns around stigma or discrimination, and how does that shape your ability to be able to share your story?
So I'd say that the idea of stigma or discrimination used to make me very conservative in what I would share, because, like, as you know, it's a really vulnerable thing to put yourself out there and share those sensitive details about some of the worst times in your life with other people who could potentially just like write you off or find ways to use that information against you. And I've heard enough stories to know that, like, depending on what you share, negative social repercussions or career consequences, like those are really valid concerns. But having said that, I've been pretty fortunate not to directly experience like any major issues that have come as a result of me sharing my story. And I think that's been because I've been pretty intentional about what I share and when I want to share it and who I choose to share it with. But on the flip side of that, I've actually experienced that the more that I've shared, like again with intentionality, the more I've benefited in terms of my own emotional healing. Because instead of having those past experiences control me and like stifle how I show up in the world, I've come to realize that they're a pretty powerful tool for connection. And so in that sense, I really think storytelling can have a therapeutic effect. Right? Like, because of the various ways I've shared my story over the years, I've been able to make friends around the world who identify on some level with what I've gone through, and I don't feel lonely and isolated anymore. And I've also found that the more times I've spoken about the things I've also found that the more times that I've spoken about what I've experienced, the more self-acceptance and self-confidence I gain, which kind of overshadows any sense of stigma or discrimination, and just helps me embrace the life that I have now instead of thinking about the life I could have had if I never got sick. And the last point I'll say on that topic is not everyone will be nice or care about what you have to say, and that's okay, because you will eventually find your people. And like, I'm grateful to have found mine in communities like the Samira Foundation.
Wonderfully put. So many times it's people in our community struggle with finding that sense of self-acceptance and self-confidence. We lose so much with the disease. So I think those are all very important points that we can really learn from. Do you have any advice for other people who are consider sharing their personal health stories?
I guess first of all, I would say that your personal story is an asset if you want it to be, but you also don't need to share any more of it than you feel comfortable with. But Like if the discomfort is just stemming from being shy or overwhelmed, and you do ultimately want to share your story, I would encourage you to just like start small and remember it doesn't have to be like an all or nothing thing. Like you don't have to tell your whole medical journey from start to finish in one go. But like as an example, I've seen several people take their first steps to go public by telling people on social media, like, hey, it's World Encephalitis Day, or hey, it's NMO Awareness Month. And this is something that personally impacts me. And the nice thing about doing things that way is that you won't be alone and you can tap into the increased community enthusiasm and support that tends to peak around those awareness events. And finally, I would encourage you to embrace how liberating it can be to share your story. Like, I know very well it can be very daunting, but it is something that becomes easier with time, like with the more reps that you get in. So it is okay, like, and normal to feel kind of out of your element in the beginning, or maybe you feel like no one really heard you. But it's storytelling is a really powerful way to make personal meaning out of what you've gone through and reframe it in a light that serves your future goals. Like me saying autoimmune encephalitis left me with a brain injury and fatigue that makes it harder to accomplish the same things I did before I got sick. It's just as accurate of a narrative as me saying like the types of things I shared earlier, but the narrative I choose to carry with me is more so the one where, autoimmune encephalitis has left me with experiences, insights, maybe some wisdom, and like that's all opened doors to incredible opportunities that I just never would have imagined before I got sick, but make me feel really fulfilled and which bring a lot of meaning and purpose to my life. And not only that, when it comes to the connections that can come from that, and you have someone reaching out to you that tells you about the impact that your story has had on them, that's just like it's such an empowering feeling. So I would just encourage anyone listening to lean into the power of storytelling to not only raise awareness or benefit others who may be facing similar challenges, but to also enrich your personal healing journey.
I love how you framed storytelling around that it's your narrative. You control it. You control the what you share, the how you share it, and the when you share it. And I think that gives us so much more agency and power behind our lived experiences. I appreciate you talking with me and sharing your insight. And I'm so fortunate I got a chance to talk to you because the work that you're doing is incredible. So thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Brian. Yeah, us shaping this podcast, as I've said several times, a fan of the podcast. And so yeah, no, it was great.